From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the big salmon packers surprise everybody and announce they want to rejoin the Marine Stewardship Council's sustainability certification program. The North Pacific Council hands down some steep cuts on Chinook bycatch, and sable fishermen in the Gulf will have a smaller catch this season. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported, in part, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska's major salmon packers who left the Marine Stewardship Council have announced they are applying to rejoin its sustainability certification program. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
Companies representing roughly 75% of Alaska's salmon harvest dumped the MSC label in 2012, at the time citing a number of reasons why MSC was at least unnecessary. But ahead of a big year for Alaska salmon, and reportedly with some leftover supply on the world market, those producers are expressing a renewed interest in MSC. Stephanie Moreland, the Director of Government Relations and Sustainability for Trident Seafoods, runs down the list of companies.
Includes Trident Seafoods, but additionally Alaska General Seafoods, Icicle, Quick Pack Fisheries, Leader Creek Fisheries, North Pacific Seafoods, Ocean Beauty, Peter Pan, Triad Fisheries, and Yukon Gold.
They and perhaps a few more smaller companies are asking to rejoin the existing MSC client group in Alaska. That group, known as the Alaska Salmon Processors Association, is headed by Silver Bay Seafoods, which held on to MSC when the others left. Rejoining will take some negotiating, says Trident's Moreland, including securing an agreement on how to share costs.
The list of requesters is certainly optimistic that we'll be able to achieve that. And we're standing by for more information from the client group.
How smoothly that goes remains to be seen. It's a complicated story why the companies left MSC in favor of RFM, or Alaska Responsible Fisheries Management, which is based on the UN's FAO standards. Some say MSC is little more than a pricey sticker, while others have criticized MSC's controversial certification of some fisheries, which seemed lazy at best. Most everyone agrees that Alaska's well-managed fisheries are and have been sustainable long before MSC was founded. But Moreland says there are markets in the world that are tough to sell to without it.
There's some European markets that are really demanding MSC. Others are just demanding third-party certification overall. And ASME has successfully stood up, and we have continued to support the Alaska RFM program to meet that demand for third-party certification. But in some markets, the MSC label is particularly important.
And access to those markets becomes even more crucial on the eve of what appears to be a very big year for Alaska wild salmon. Norm Van Vactor is the president and CEO of the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation and has decades of experience in the salmon processing industry. While Van Vactor acknowledges there are valid complaints about MSC, he says he's glad to see the announcement that the major buyers are coming back to it.
It's certainly not a necessary thing. There's no one thing that's necessary, but I think it's a good thing. And it's not just about Bristol Bay sockeye salmon, but it really is Alaska salmon. You know, there have been some big pink runs as well that have come into play. And now that we're all looking at a very large Bristol Bay salmon run forecasted around the corner, I think salespeople need the ability to have as many channels and consumer bases available to them as possible.
The group of Alaska salmon producers attempting to rejoin MSC certification say they're planning to keep the RFM program as well, saying that offering both would ensure more Alaska salmon is sold to more consumers around the world. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show on demand anytime at kmxt.org. The Bering Sea pollock fleet is about to face tougher restrictions when it comes to salmon. Last weekend, federal regulators agreed to tie the cap on Chinook bycatch to the health of Western Alaska's salmon runs. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has more.
When the North Pacific Fishery Management Council first set up a hard limit on Chinook salmon, they set it in stone. Now they'll check each year to make sure at least 250,000 salmon got out of the Bering Sea and back up the river system. Otherwise, the pollock fleet will lose a quarter of their Chinook limit. Council member Sam Cotton represents the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He introduced the measure.
At this point, any additional fish returning to those rivers improves the ability to meet escapement goals, which is necessary for long-term sustainability of the stock. and the people reliant on that fishery.
After a string of subsistence fishing closures and historically bad returns, the council was under pressure to act. The final vote was unanimous, but there was still some disagreement. Council member Bill Twite of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife said the initial cut was too steep. He carried an amendment to bump it up by a few thousand fish. The pollock industry was almost universally opposed. Captains and fleet managers said they've started to see more salmon on the fishing grounds. Until they make it back to the Unalakleet, Upper Yukon, and Kuskokwim rivers, the runs will still look bad, and the bycatch limit will drop with them. Under those conditions, Donna Parker of the Arctic Storm Management Group said she believes the pollock harvest is likely to get shut down.
And you're going to shut it down without a benefit to rebuilding those rivers. It has been demonstrated this will not impact reproductive productivity of the rivers.
A clear estimate wasn't available from the North Pacific Council's scientist, in part because it's hard to say what happens to a salmon on its way upstream. The ecosystem still being researched. The financial impacts were an immediate concern. The Bering Sea pollock fishery is the largest in the country, and almost all of it is landed in the eastern Aleutian Islands. Frank Kelty is a resource analyst for the city of Unalaska, where pollock makes up well over half of the local tax base.
Every king salmon in that area of Western Alaska is important, but we could have a major impact to a fishery and communities in my area that I don't think is justified to change what we have in place now.
Over the last few years, trawlers have been getting fewer Chinook on accident, down to around 13,000 fish, or 2% of the total population. Using excluder nets and rolling closures to seal off the areas where there's the most salmon has made a difference. The North Pacific Council voted to expand both of those measures. They also increased the amount of pollock that's up for harvest in the winter, when bycatch rates are lowest for Chinook and chum salmon. They're a new priority, and they may not be as threatened as Chinook, but chums are still an important source of food and income in Western Alaska. Tribal leaders from the Tanana Chiefs Conference and the Association of Village Council Presidents spoke on behalf of the region at the council meeting. But Joe Garney was one of the few residents who managed to travel to Anchorage from his village just outside of Nome. Garney said things have changed in Teller.
For the last 12 years, I've not caught one king. So I've had a forced closure on my king fishing. And, I made the adjustment. I'm still here. I'm still healthy.
In time, Garney said the pollock industry and the people who rely on it will learn to make their own adjustments. The new restrictions on bycatch won't go into effect immediately. They still have to be reviewed by the U.S. Department of Commerce, and the North Pacific Council also wants a look to make sure the new regulations match up with their intent. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
When the 2015 Prince William Sound sablefish season opened this week, the 59 permit holders had before them only half the amount of fish available for harvest that they did last season. KCHU's Marsha Lynn has the details.
Last year's take was a record breaker in the wrong direction.
We harvested just under 97,000 pounds, which is the lowest harvest level ever in the history of the Prince William Sound sablefish fishery.
This is Maria Wessel, Cordova-based fish and game groundfish management biologist. She says since 1993, the GHL has been static, holding steady at 242,000 pounds.
And that harvest level was set based on a yield per habitat model. And so we felt, looking at the declining catch per unit effort as well as the decline in harvest, that a reduction in the guideline harvest level was warranted.
This year's GHL was cut 50%, down to 122,000 pounds. Wessel says studies show mixed sablefish stocks.
Because we don't do a survey for sablefish in the Sound, we don't really have abundance information. However, based on tagging surveys that we've done and that the National Marine Fisheries Service has done, they've tagged over 17,000 sablefish in the Gulf of Alaska and tracked movements. We feel certainly all of the populations out in the Gulf of Alaska, the federal waters, are well mixed. And there's some evidence that the Prince William Sound population is is mixed into the greater Gulf of Alaska population as well.
She says that was a factor in how Fish and Game set this year's harvest quota.
We tied our Prince William Sound guideline harvest level to the federal acceptable biological catch. And as we looked at how that varied over the years since we have had this static guideline harvest level, we just adjusted it based on that percentage variation in the federal acceptable biological catch. And that's how we arrived at our guideline harvest level this year.
But the fleet wasn't caught totally off guard. In a mid-December registration deadline notice, Fish and Game indicated a drop in the harvest quota for this season was likely, and during an interview last December, Wessler said she believes fishermen are supportive.
They know what's going on, and I think most of them will welcome that change because they want to see the resource protected.
The 2015 Prince William Sound sablefish season opens on April 15th and runs through August 31st, with most of the action on both ends, says Wessel.
What typically happens is we'll see a big pulse of effort at the beginning of the fishery, and then in the middle, folks tend to participate in other fisheries, like perhaps salmon, and then towards the end of the season, in August, folks will start coming back in.
This is a limited entry fishery, and Wessel says a lot of the sablefish quota is fished in conjunction with halibut IFQ. That means some fishermen will call it quits after reaching their halibut limit. In Valdez, I'm Marsha Lynn.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Senate committee did not act Monday on the governor's two nominees for the State Board of Fisheries, and state lawmakers canceled a joint session planned for Friday to vote on confirming them and all of Governor Bill Walker's appointments. A new date wasn't immediately set, but Wednesday, Walker issued a proclamation calling the two bodies together for a joint Friday session. The two appointees to consider for the Fish Board are from the Kenai Peninsula and the Interior. Soldotna resident Robert Ruffner, who is currently the executive director of the nonprofit Kenai Watershed Forum, was appointed in March to a seat formerly held by Carl Johnstone. While in committee, Ruffner was questioned for about an hour before public testimony was heard. The committee also considered the governor's other nominee, Orville Huntington, a Hooslea resident. Huntington is generally considered a subsistence representative and has served on the board since 2012. His hearing, including public testimony supporting his continued service, took less than 10 minutes. Sunday is the scheduled last day of this year's legislative session.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay. Permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KDLG's Dave Benninger in Dillingham, KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reporting from Anchorage, and KCHU's Marsha Lynn in Valdez. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.